See what I did there? Oldest DJ trick in the book.
Hey, it's raining outside. I'll play a song about rain.
And it was a nice dissolve, a segue.
Thank you.
Segue, yes.
Thank you.
Opening theme into Here Comes the Rain Again.
Only another DJ geek would notice that. hey, man, nice dissolve.
Way to hit the post, man.
Only to be topped by... Hey, man, let's hear my shotgun out of that jingle. Complete radio talk. Let's talk about jingle packages.
I feel young again now.
That's good. All but like three people are going, what the hell is he talking about?
I'm like 24 now, not 64. Thank you.
I'm trying to remember what year this song was. Here Comes
that
the
Rain.
That was
around 1982 or so.
Hang on. 84.
84?
83, 84.
I'm doing the Google on it. Hang on 1 second here. 1983. And I love Annie Lennox. I've always loved Annie Lennox. I still love Annie Lennox. But this is when she was with Dave Stewart. Not the newscaster, the singer. I'm Dave Stewart at City Hall. Here Comes the Rain Again. It's going to be a very inside show today.
Well, you're right.
This is a show for radio geeks today. I just get the sense we got a lot of radio geeks today. So I'm going to throw in a lot of jargon, a lot of industry talk. I may talk ratings for a little while. Shwani, when's the last time we had a good talk about Cher and Cume?
It's been a while. I think it was that night in Greektown where we had
where
that
I have the incriminating pictures
where
of you.
You have the incriminating pictures, yes, that we somehow or some way bring up every week. Might have done that.
Love the Eurythmics. You know what? It got me. It's funny, you know, during the newscast when you interrupted me, the... And you're talking about where you went last night, which you won't tell us. I know you were out somewhere.
I was not.
I know you were at some club last night.
No, I wasn't.
You're like the old guy standing in the corner looking at all the 20-year-olds not wearing masks. You're the one guy in the corner with glasses and a mask on. And nobody else is having their... What are the 20-year-olds drinking now? I know it's something with Red Bull.
I have no idea.
I know it's something with Red Bull. What's that drink that that tastes awful? I've never had.
Well, there's so many of them.
No, but there's one that's like famous for tasting awful.
That was Zima.
No.
Zima was horrible.
Is there something called Malort?
Oh, yeah.
Malort, is that it?
Yeah.
Does it taste awful?
I never had it.
What's in it?
It's just a liqueur, I think.
Malort?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know what it tastes like. I don't know anything about it. All I know is what, you know, what I hear, you know, because I pay attention to the the millennials when they talk. I hang on their every word, as you know. And it's supposed to taste awful, and nobody can stop drinking it. It's a liqueur. Here it is. It's a liqueur. Long produced by Chicago's Carl Jepsen Company. It's made in the Pilsen neighborhood. Oh, what kind of alcohol is Malort? Let's play Google today. Malort is a variation, Shwani, of the Swedish liquor Brännvin. Brännvin?
Mm-hmm. Brännvin, yeah.
70 to 80 proof unflavored beverage made of potatoes or grain.
Okay.
Sort of like slightly diluted vodka or unflavored schnapps.
Hmm.
That does sound awful.
It's a pretty high alcohol content, too.
Is it?
Fairly so.
I thought everything's about 80 proof.
Well, that's pretty... getting up there.
That's why you're so tired today.
I never even heard of this, let alone
too many Malorts hanging out with the millennials last night, trying to recapture your ute.
Oh,
millennials and more Malort.
But it reminded me when we were talking about this. It reminded me of back in the day where you know I used to go to all the clubs back in the day.
Yeah, you had the chains on and
I had my shirt unbuttoned practically down to my belly button.
Great big sideburns.
Enjoy your breakfast, everyone. And we'd close the bars stay there until the bars close, you know, 2 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes we go to the 4 o'clock bars. And then the big deal was you go somewhere to have breakfast afterwards. You know, I used to go for breakfast because I wanted to feel like I was a big shot. I'd go over to the Hyatt Regency right next door.
Oh, nice.
Hyatt Regency, you know, because they serve breakfast all night. You go there with your pals and you sit around, and I smoked cigarettes back then. You sit around and act like, pretend like you're a big shot at 5 o'clock in the morning smoking cigarettes and having a cheese omelet. Idiot.
Were you by yourself?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. It's with my posse.
Your entourage.
I was rolling with my posse.
You had...
How depressing would that be if you went out and had an omelet by yourself?
You had a whole group of followers at another radio station.
Which one?
WCFL.
I'm sure it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. But you had a whole group of people that followed you around.
Yeah,
that
was my posse.
That was, yeah. I would come in to go
giddy
to
up.
Work.
You know what I would say at the end of my show? Come on, giddy up, let's go. I got Malort to drink. That Malort's not going to drink itself.
So, you know, I was going into work. I was going into the newsroom, and you were leaving. And there was always a group of people there following you around.
Sounds about right, huh?
Mm-hmm. Can I say? What can I say? I was fun back then.
Yeah, about as much fun as you are now.
Right? Oh, no.
I'm having evil flashbacks to my days in Peoria when I would work on a Top 40 station on a Sunday morning. Of course, being out all night Saturday. And my first job there was to run the records for Casey's Top 40.
Oh, wow.
And there was
they
one day.
Records, they came in on actual vinyl.
They came in on vinyl. Yeah, so you had to go to commercial and queue it up. And there was one morning where it skipped from number 21 to number 10 because they put the wrong album on. Like, didn't know what was going on at that point. Yeah, that was a nice little phone call to talk to the program director on that time. And yeah, we couldn't go back and play the other ones because it was too late for that.
Did you go out for an omelet after you made that terrible mistake?
I think I might have brought an omelet with me. If you call the McMuffin an omelet, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
So you ended up with egg on your face.
Basically, yeah. It only happened once. Trust me, all that had to happen was once.
I like how when you tell a joke or you pause, you set it up just to make sure that everyone hears your joke.
Everyone understands.
You pause for a second.
It's timing, yeah.
You pause. So everyone goes, oh, there's the Schwanee I'm about to tell a joke. Pause.
Well, that would... You would end up with egg on your face if you went from number 21 to number 10.
Yeah. Hey, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
And the hits just keep on coming. They're just coming really fast at you.
Number 10, let's go back to number 19.
I heard one of those Casey Kasem countdown shows someplace, and it was fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Fun to listen to. Casey had his long-distance dedication. We should bring back some of these things.
Ooh. Do you remember what year this would have been, Andy? What songs
for me?
Were...
Oh, yeah, this would have been like 1991-ish, probably. I think, unfortunately, songs like Ice, Ice Baby might have been on there from that Vanilla Ice character.
That's Vanilla Ice with his number one song, Ice, Ice Baby.
Some songs just stick in your head. I think the Flame from Cheap Trick might have been up there at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. The American Top 40 show that I heard recently was like 1977.
Ooh.
Every song was a disco song. Talking about going out to the clubs.
77 would be.
Oh, yeah. It was like every other song was a Bee Gee song.
Andy Gibb.
When it
Casey
wasn't the Bee Gees.
The Sunshine Band.
It was
your music show right there.
I already pitched the all disco show. Yeah. They won't give me an all disco show. They won't give me an all polka show. They won't give me an all disco show.
How'd I go with the Cars for Kids one?
Well, we haven't had the meeting. I've been busy this week. I haven't had a meeting, but that's my current proposal on the table. A show of all music done by the singers from the Cars for Kids commercials.
That's awesome.
I think it would be great.
Segway them all together. Mm-hmm. Just let them run one right after another.
Guess so.
You can do that.
So we have a very entertaining show today, I think. I mean, considering it's a
when
holiday
isn't
weekend.
Isn't it entertaining?
You know what? Getting back to our let's talk all inside radio and nothing but jargon today. It's practically DJ law that if you're working on the holiday weekend, you're supposed to just phone the show in.
Yeah.
You're not really supposed to put very much effort into it. And we fly straight into the face of that. We've got nothing but content, entertaining, top quality content on today's program. It's almost a shame to play it. That's how good it is.
Because we won't be able to match it the succeeding
right,
Sundays.
Because every right? show for, you know, like for the next 2 months is going to seem awful compared to today's show. Because we have, that's how good today's show is today. Leading off with a fantastic Zoom conversation that I had with the one, the only, Bob Newhart. How about that?
Okay.
He turned 91 years old yesterday.
Wow.
Was his birthday yesterday. And, you know, you do these Zoom calls, and I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going into this thinking, I'm about to have a Zoom call with a 91-year-old guy. I'm going to see his eyeball. That's all I'm going to see. Because, you know, I don't know if anyone's tried to do a Zoom call with older people, like Shawnee, for example.
I did a Zoom call.
And I thought...
All you saw was my forehead.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, that's generally, it takes a little while to kind of get the hang of it. So I thought, this is going to be a nightmare, having a Zoom call with a 91-year-old guy. He was completely with it.
Right,
he had it right down. He had everything perfect. And he was funny and sharp. And I as if I did not have enough admiration, respect, and love for him. He is firing on all cylinders, and we're going to play that interview coming up a little bit later on. Also, we talked with the director and star of what probably is going to be the number one movie in the world this weekend. The movie is called Tenet, directed by five-time Oscar-nominated director Christopher Nolan, and his Oscar-nominated star of the movie, John David Washington. It is required by law when I say John David's name that I have to also say son of Denzel, because he is the son of Denzel and Paulette Washington. And so we'll talk about that movie, tell you what I think of the movie. We'll share the conversation that we had with those two A-listers. We've got that and so much more today. Last week at this time, we were talking about the death of Chadwick Boseman, the actor that played Black Panther, that played Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, that shocking death after his four-year-long battle with colon cancer. Chadwick Boseman had a history of some theater work in Chicago with the Congo Square Theater Company in Chicago before he was ever in any of those movies. We'll talk with one of the ensemble members with Congo Square who worked with Chadwick Boseman and get his memories of this young actor who has gone too soon. All of that, so much more. And do we have maybe the best far-flung forecast you've heard? I have set the bar so high for the program today with content. Shawnee, are you going to keep the momentum going with the far-flung forecast?
We don't have one.
Okay, then.
Just kidding. Kidding. Yes, we do.
Stand by. We've
and
got
it's very interesting.
5 minutes of dead air coming up next on WGN. And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, gather around the radio. Put on a warm blanket, although I don't exactly know why. And get ready for America's favorite feature, the far-flung forecast. Compendium of fascinating fun facts with your host, Dave Jeremiah Schwann.
Another biblical middle name. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Uncle Dean. Today, our far-flung forecast takes us to Troy, New York.
Troy, New York.
Troy, New York is north.
T-R-O-Y?
T-R-O-Y. It is named for...
Troy Donahue?
It's named for the city of Troy that was the legendary city in Homer's Iliad.
Oh, my.
The legendary city of Troy, going back to the 1700s. It is just up the Hudson River a ways from another city called New York City. But Troy goes back...
I like when you clear your throat before a joke also.
But Troy goes back to the 1700s.
A lot of people don't signal their jokes the way Shawnee does.
Joke
just
coming.
Trying beep, to, beep, beep. It's a pause for it's a pause for dramatic effect.
He pauses or he clears his throat. You know, joke is coming soon.
But Troy is also the home of a man named Samuel Wilson. Ooh. Does anybody know anything about Samuel Wilson?
Samuel Wilson.
Wilson Sporting Goods.
Didn't he co-star with Tom Hanks in Castaway?
He might have done. Yeah, Wilson, right. No, the man wasn't a volleyball. He was a real person. And he was, during the War of 1812, someone who packaged and sold meat, barrels of beef, to the United States Army during the War of 1812. And he would stamp these barrels U.S., meaning for the United States. However, soldiers began referring to the food as Uncle Sam's. A local newspaper in Troy picked up the story, and on tomorrow's date in 1813, that story about Uncle Sam's meat was in the local paper in Troy. Then, as things progressed, a cartoonist, Thomas Nast, came up with a popular image, an artist's conception of what Uncle Sam would look like. And then in September of 1961, finally, U.S. Congress recognized Samuel Wilson as the progenitor of America's national symbol of Uncle Sam.
With the red, white, and blue.
With the red, white, and blue hat.
Top hat.
I know you would remember, Dean, as I do, when we were young boys, the signs all over the place. I want you.
Right.
For the U.S. Army, and that was Uncle Sam pointing at you. So Troy, New York,
good home. He could have had a can of Vienna sausage in his hand. So.
Or it's Spam.
It's a good thing they edited the image over the years. Wow, I never knew that. That's
how it happened.
Started because of Sam Wilson.
Samuel Wilson.
And his canned meats.
And the meats, actually barreled beef. Is what it was.
Barrel beef.
Dried barrel beef, you know, for preservation for the soldiers so they could, you know, what they call a large shelf life now, you know, that would be preserved with the salt. But that
would
all
happened.
Would
that be the kind of beef that they used to refer to as being on a shingle?
You could refer to it that way, yes.
Is that how it was? Yes.
I just keep it that way.
I don't know what that means exactly, but...
Well, on a cracker or a piece of...
No, I mean, I know what it... I don't get why it was called that.
I don't either, but it was...
It was beef.
Sometimes there was another word.
It was like a cracker or it's toast, something. It was beef with like some creamy stuff on it that was on toast, but they called it something on a shingle.
Right. We'll just call it food on a shingle here for safety's
sake. What does that mean, Uncle Shawnee? What's Uncle Dean talking about?
He's talking about... Never mind.
Yeah, come on, get out of that.
Troy, New York.
Let's have one of your pre-joke pauses now.
Troy, I'm going to have egg on my face here if I'm not careful. Troy, New York. Partly cloudy skies today, 64. The home of Uncle Sam.
Very good. You ready,
Samuel Wilson,
give us some news?
Oh, yes.
In a minute?
I am.
You got a minute?
All right. It is 9:38.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. This is the time slot in which we normally talk about all things COVID-19, and we're very happy to have joining us this week Dr. Michael Roizen, who is the Chief Wellness Officer Emeritus in the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, joining us. Dr. Roizen, thank you for spending a little of your holiday weekend with us. We appreciate it.
Dean, it's always a privilege. Thank you.
So, you know, these are the stories and the headlines that I'm seeing and hearing and reading about on the news about COVID-19. And they are stories about schools that have massive numbers of students, in some cases closing down, who are breaking the virus rules, dismissing students, quarantining them, sending them home. New Jersey College, Iowa. There have been universities here in Illinois. Dr. Fauci, the last couple of days, talked about how here in Illinois, we are at risk of numbers going up at a disproportionate rate. Illinois are at a very high risk of a COVID-19 surge over the holiday weekend. Do you agree that We are probably going to be looking at a surge as people get together for the long holiday weekend.
Well, the key is social distancing and mask wearing. And doing that now, you've got rain, which helps keep outdoor crowds from being close together, but maybe it brings people indoors. So,
which could be bad, right? I mean, instead
yes,
of people
that
outside.
Could be bad, I'm saying, but yeah. I think that we should notice the keys. And for me, one of the crazy things is schools where they get infected send them home to their parents who are much more at risk of serious effects. So if I were a school and you got a set of infections, as long as you were in a place that could handle the illnesses, meaning you were in a city like Chicago, which has the hospital capacity to handle it if the young people get seriously ill, I would not send them home. But in fact, you do want to have social distancing. You do want to have mask wearing to protect each other. It's the best thing for the economy, because the economy can open up, paradoxically, better if everyone wears a mask and we keep those over who are vulnerable safe. So we're all at risk of a recurrence if the temperatures go down and the humidity gets around 50%. That's when the virus looks like it is most infective. And so the second wave we've had really isn't a second wave. It's what I would call a stupid wave. It's a wave because we didn't behave right when we started to open up, and we got too lax about mask wearing and social distancing, washing hands, especially washing before eating. So the point is, until we get more knowledge about the immunogenicity of the vaccines and of infection, we're going to have to use social distancing, mask wearing, and especially washing hands and washing before eating, and keeping and trying to protect those who are most vulnerable, the elderly and those with comorbid conditions, which is 50% of Americans, but it is more 50% over the age of 50 that are the most vulnerable. Those are the people who've got to be protected most.
So
I was just in Philadelphia yesterday. And it's an amazing thing. It was literally, I did not see one person. The streets are crowded. The restaurants outside are spilling out, meaning a restaurant on a corner takes half the block in Philadelphia for social distancing, etc. The servers must get more exercise that way. But in any case, the point is there wasn't a person without a mask.
Yeah.
I literally did not see one person without a mask in the whole town. And I was out there outside for probably 3 or 4 hours out in Philadelphia.
A couple of weeks ago, I had friends in town who live in New York City. And they said they could not believe how lax people are in the Chicago area, both city and suburbs, for not wearing masks. Because I guess in New York City, same thing as Philadelphia, everybody is wearing a mask. Everybody takes it seriously. And, you know, we just don't, according to, you know, observers from New York City, my friends who, we're visiting here.
I don't know why that is. I mean, it's a strange thing that we in the Midwest are not taking it as seriously as those on the coast. But it is, when it comes, the fear, we had two main fears when this started. One, that it would mutate into a more lethal variety. It hasn't. And usually viruses don't do that because they want to survive, and they need you to survive for them to survive. And the second thing is that we didn't get immunologic protection. What we're seeing in the vaccines is they're generating immunologic responses. We don't know whether that's going to protect. Will it be efficacious in blocking the virus from infecting you or you being able to be a carrier for others? We still don't have that knowledge.
So,
and the crazy thing about the Chinese and Russian vaccine is they use a recombinant adenovirus type 5 to give the vaccine. The problem with that is when it was used for RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, it actually sensitized the T cells that we have and increased receptor acceptance of the virus and actually made things worse. Even though it was immunologically sensitive, it made things worse. And so that's the real, those viruses, I don't know why the Chinese and Russians chose that, because they knew the data on RSV. It's a crazy, so I wouldn't volunteer for one of those two studies.
Yeah, I want to talk about vaccine update in a minute, but just real quick before we go to the break, the weather today is supposed to clear up this afternoon. People are going to be outside and are going to be gathering for the holiday. It's supposed to rain again later on tonight, so people are going to be indoors and gathering for the holiday. Tomorrow is Labor Day. Presumably people are going to be getting together. How do we do it and stay safe?
The simple way is everybody wear a mask. And if someone isn't wearing a mask, you give them one and you say, I need you to protect me. And you can make it as selfish as you want, but if you're not wearing a mask, you're being very selfish and risking infecting others. So you want everyone to wear a mask and then make sure you wash, or at least make sure you wipe off with a sanitary gel before you eat. And social distancing is you can, I saw it, again, both in Philadelphia and at Case Western Reserve on the campus here in Cleveland. The students were sitting in a circle that was literally, each of them was 6 feet from the nearest person. It was really, you should have given them an award. It was really proud of. But that was typical. I mean, I saw at least in the park in Philadelphia, I must have seen 10 or 15 groups like that where the students were going through, I guess it would be roundtables in preparation for their college classes. And they were all socially distanced and all wearing masks. And that's really the appropriate thing.
Yeah, as opposed to yesterday, I was running some errands and drove by some, restaurants that were outdoor seated. And people were, they were outside, but seated at a table. Probably, if you and I are at a table facing each other, we're probably no more than, maybe 3 or 4 feet away from each other. No masks, but seated at a table, that's not safe, is it? Even if you're outside?
Well, you want it 6 feet, and you want to have them diagonal to each other and going straight. Now, one of the game changers is actually made by a company I understand is based in Chicago, is what we call a far UVC light. So UVC is what kills viruses, bacteria, and fungi in the air.
That's ultraviolet light, right?
In the air.
Ultraviolet light, right? Ultraviolet light, is that right?
It's a specific wavelength of ultraviolet light. So UVA and B don't kill as well and very poorly compared to UVC.
Got it.
And UVC gets blocked by our ozone, so you need to get it from, a artificial source such as a light. And the reason we don't have this widespread is that the wavelength is associated with developing of cataracts and skin cancer. But there's been a finding that if you use the specific UVC wavelength, which a company in Chicago is the largest maker of, that is wavelength between 205 and 225. The recent data shows no harm to humans. Large-scale studies done at Columbia University, no harm to animals, no harm to animal eyes, no harm to animal skin, no harm to human eyes, no harm to human skin. And the real benefit is that within 5 minutes, it kills 99.9% of the virus in air.
Wow.
So you could have table lights like that,
yeah,
even indoors or in the back of chairs. Now, it's too expensive to do that now, but, for example, the Miami Dolphins have installed these in their locker room. So you could, you can clearly make it so you can, if they get cheap enough, if they're made on a chip or made in LCD form, then you could, in fact, have this is a game changer, not just for this pandemic, but for others that are bound to come.
I want to get an update on where we are with vaccines. Dr. Michael Roizen, Cleveland Clinic, rejoining us after a break. And hopefully we can squeeze in some of your questions as well. 312-981-7200, WGN, it's 954. And great to have Dr. Michael Roizen on with us, the Chief Wellness Officer Emeritus, Cleveland Clinic. Doctor, where are we with virus updates or vaccine updates right now?
Well, there are at least five, I think six, in phase three trial in the United States that are U.S.-based. You've heard of some of them, such as Moderna and the Oxford-Pfizer collaboration, but there are six in phase three trial. One of the things that has to happen is there has to be enough infection around so that you can tell the placebo vaccination from the actual. And then you want to follow safety for a long period of time. That is, some of these vaccines have had a long track record before there is, if you will, problems develop. And we use vaccines for healthy people. It isn't a treatment in this case. So you, and those take a long time. So that's why when the FDA commissioner came out 2 weeks ago and said he might give a emergency use approval, that there was so much immediate pushback, because we want these to be safe. And it takes a large number of people in the elderly and those with comorbidities, not just healthy soldiers, as were tested with one of the vaccines. You want it to be the people at most risk who you're going to give it to demonstrate both safety and how long does the immune vaccination protection last. Well, obviously, what they're going to show is a short-term protection. We don't know how long any of these vaccines just will last with protection if we only have a three-month trial. So there's both skepticism and hope on these, but with over 180 vaccines in some form of trial worldwide, we are likely to get one that creates neutralizing antibodies. We're likely to get one that can be lyophilized or can be sent around the world, doesn't have to be stored frozen. And we're likely to be able to have one that has demonstrated safety.
Sure.
But nothing is assured. As you know, we still don't have a vaccination that works successfully against HIV, et cetera.
Should we be going ahead with our flu vaccines? This is normally the time of year when people do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In other words, the goal, I would say, is to get your flu vaccine by September 15th. And you may need a second booster this year because of the timing of it. But the hospital systems in America can't tolerate both a flu outbreak, a traditional flu outbreak, and a COVID-19 right. outbreak. The interesting thing is we're doing more guessing on the flu vaccine this year than usual because, for example, the mask wearing is so good in Australia and so good in some of the Southern Hemisphere countries that we haven't been able to get. They haven't had flu outbreaks like traditional outbreaks,
right.
So we're not sure of all the types that are usual.
Yeah, the 269 area code asks, is it safe to talk to someone with a glass storm door between us while not wearing masks.
Glass storm door. Yeah, it's very hard for them to communicate through the glass. You won't get it through the glass.
So it is safe to talk between a glass without a mask?
Yeah, you won't get it through. Assuming there's no airflow between the two people, yeah, you're not going to get any infection.
Yeah, as long as there's no airflow is the key. Nancy, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
I had Guillain-Barré syndrome. I cannot take a flu shot because it has egg in it. Do you know if the new vaccines that they are testing will have egg in them or not?
All right.
Two things, Nancy. Thank you for the call. One is there are now flu vaccines prepared without any egg product, so you can get one of those, and those are available for people, especially who've had Guillain-Barré. And the second thing is many of the current vaccines, these mRNA vaccines, and you're talking about how new they are actually prepared without any egg.
Okay, so that'll
be... many of them are.
Good news.
So we expect there's more chance you will be able to have a... If we do have a vaccine, there's a greater chance that it will be non-egg-based than egg-based.
Yeah, you can go get your flu shot at the same time. Doctor, thank you for spending some time with us. We always appreciate it. Dr. Michael Roizen is the Chief Wellness Officer, Emeritus Cleveland Clinic. I hope you have a great holiday weekend, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean, and to you and your listeners as well.
Little Sunday morning get together here on Chicago's very own Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. I haven't heard this in a long time. Fun to hear this. You know, I didn't see the whole movie. I saw part of the original Blues Brothers. That's a good movie. That is one good movie.
You've just now concluded that?
I like to take my time before I review this. I don't like to jump to hasty conclusions. I have a 30-year rule when it comes to reviewing movies. You know, I remember the morning, you know that famous scene in the movie where the guy that played the Nazi, was that Henry Gibson?
Might have been Henry Gibson.
The actor Henry Gibson, he was on Laughing, but a little mousy little actor that played a Nazi who was chasing the Blues Brothers. And over by McCormick Place Dare, he's chasing them, and he flies off of a bridge that's under construction. I saw that when that was going on. Whatever station I was working at then, I think it was WFYR, Fire Radio. I was driving in, and I see, you know, there's some activity going on, and suddenly I see a car flying in the air. It's like, well, this is unusual for a Sunday morning. But I'm sure a lot of people have stories of seeing that film being made in Chicago. Are there too many more quintessentially Chicago films than the Blues Brothers? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I was walking down Michigan Avenue when they were filming The Untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
And what is now Roosevelt University there at Michigan and Ida B. Wells Drive, it was Congress Parkway then, was made into the hotel where Kevin Costner walks in.
Oh,
to...
Oh, that's fantastic.
Isn't that a great scene? Yeah. And Robert De Niro comes down the stairs.
Yeah, right.
I was walking by there when they were working on that.
Did you say anything to De Niro?
I didn't see him. I didn't see anybody.
Oh, you didn't
see any of the actors? No, I didn't see any of the actors.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
But I was surprised that they had the sidewalk open because the building itself was made into the hotel. The sign that said Roosevelt University was covered up with a hotel sign.
Right,
and
right.
Could look inside, and you could see that they had converted the entranceway there into what looked like a hotel lobby.
That was pretty neat. That's a fantastic building.
Isn't that a gorgeous building?
That is a gorgeous, gorgeous building. I would for several years, I did my favorite broadcast that I do outside of the TV station, the Lollapalooza broadcast that I do, or as I like to call it, the weekend where I feel like I'm older than everybody in the world, hanging around all them youngsters out at Lollapalooza. But anyway, I would do broadcasts. You know, they have like sort of porticos on the... I guess it would be the second floor there that you could stand on. And I would report, you know, Lollapalooza was down in the park right behind me. But I would be in that building for, you know, for days. And that is just such a spectacularly made building inside and out.
Not to mention the Auditorium Theater.
Auditorium Theater.
Wow.
Exactly right. That's connected to it. Really, really, really nice. I remember what I was going to say, talking about being there when
there was a little dead air there, since we're talking radio jargon today. There was a little dead air there.
It's for a dramatic pause.
Oh, okay.
We thoroughly rehearse every second of the show. I know it doesn't seem like any preparation goes into the show.
That's because there wasn't.
But anyway, talking about being there when movies were being made, remember when they shot that movie on Michigan Avenue? Right in front of the old Showcase studio window.
Oh, yes.
It was
one of the Transformers.
Transformers.
I think it was the Transformers movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were like throwing cars over the bridge. The Michigan Avenue Bridge was open, and cars were flying over the open bridge.
They had flamethrowers on the river.
And they were literally right. I mean, Josh Duhamel, Tyrese Gibson. Shia LaBeouf, was he in that? Shia LaBeouf? You know, they're all coming up. They had, you know, beverages and things right in front of our window. And these guys are, you know, coming up to get a bottle of water. And I'm, you know, trying to get somebody on the air. And, you know, nobody's giving me the time of day to talk to me. And, you know, I'm doing a segment. And a cab that was parked on Michigan Avenue explodes. The cab goes flying away. It was crazy that morning. I think I still have pictures. I'm going to post those on social media. Anyway, one of the reasons that I played that Blues Brothers song was, did you see Jim Belushi in town for a new marijuana dispensary?
I did see that. Yeah,
he's not with the dispensary, I guess. His new company, Jim Belushi, his new company is growing marijuana in Oregon, and he's just released a Blues Brothers variety, I guess you might call it, strain. I'm not sure exactly what you call it, but it's a new Blues Brothers marijuana that now is available at a dispensary in Skokie. In case you want to go someplace after the show today, Shawnee, go score some weed. Talk about like old times back in the day.
I
used to be that you go to Skokie, you get a nice corned beef sandwiches
now
at Kaufman's. Now you go up there to score some weed.
Boy, you sound pretty wacky there. according to the story, though, apparently he's been you know, growing it for some time in Oregon, and is now making this available here as his Blues Brothers type.
Right. Yeah. No, he has several varieties, I guess. What do you call it exactly? It's different.
You could call it a variety.
It's a variety. It's a strain. That sounds naughty.
No, we don't need to use the word strain.
Yeah.
But with all of the
but it's a
viruses.
Different kind of. I guess it would. What's like strong, medium, super strong? I don't know.
That variety would apply.
Not 100% sure how that whole thing works, but he is apparently a very, very successful marijuana grower in Oregon right now, and that's his new deal. That's his new job. Doesn't he have a reality show? think he has a reality show called Growing Belushi or something like that. That's, you know, you can, you know, see what it's like to be a marijuana farmer. You know, on a kind of a serious note, he talked about how if his brother John had, you know, if marijuana had been legal back then and John, his brother John was a pot smoker instead of using other drugs that he used, that John Belushi would still be alive today. Isn't that, that's a kind of profound statement to make, I think.
Yeah, it really is. And now there's dead air again.
I like to give the listeners a moment to
reflect.
Yeah, to discuss what we're talking about. We paused for a minute so you can talk about it with your friends and family.
Yeah, they're looking at the radios going, what are they doing now?
I thought you were going to have a little more to say about that.
Well, I just was, you know, being reflective myself.
All right. It's all right. You know, marijuana does dull the senses, so I understand.
Okay.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we should. Want some Fritos and garlic dip? You may have seen my story on WGN-TV, by the way, on Bob Newhart. It was Bob's 91st birthday yesterday. We had a fantastic chat with him. We built it into a nice story that ran yesterday on WGN-TV. Oh, and also, by the way, Uncle Dean making his debut on News Nation on WGN America. My Bob Newhart story was also on our new national primetime newscast, News Nation, seen on WGN America on a cable channel near you. So anyway, the Bob Newhart interview, the full Bob Newhart interview, is coming up at 11:30 this morning. So stick around for that. And we've got another special A-list interview for you in just a second here. The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove is open and able to meet your comprehensive health care needs. With patient safety as the number one goal, the clinic has taken a variety of steps with you in mind, including telehealth appointments for some services, their wide range of patient-centered health care, including the Dental Institute, the Family Medicine Clinic, Speech Language Institute, Physical Therapy Institute, and also their Speech Language Institute, and also their Eye Institute. You can learn more by going to MWUClinics.com or by calling 630-743-4500. 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic is your family's home for health care.
All I have for you is a word. Tell it. It'll open the right doors. Some of the wrong ones, too.
So Tenet is the latest movie from five-time Academy-nominated director Christopher Nolan, who gave us the Dark Knight movies. He gave us Inception. He gave us Interstellar. He gave us Memento. The list goes on and on for Christopher Nolan movies, which are usually extremely challenging, always entertaining, sometimes a little bit complex to watch, more often than not, a little bit complex to watch. In this new movie, Tenet, he rises to the challenge of a movie that I thought was spectacular looking. It's stunning. The cinematography is absolutely stunning in this movie. And at the core of this movie, it's a James Bond movie on steroids, really. John David Washington, Denzel's son, plays a CIA agent who has to find out who has developed this new technology that, as they call it in the movie, inverts energy, which means reverses time. And the people who control this reversal of time are out to destroy the world. That's what it's about. So any good CIA agent would naturally try to stop that right away. That's basically what this movie is about. But Christopher Nolan, in his, you know, kind of typical Christopher Nolan sort of way, makes the story so intricate and so complicated. It's difficult, honestly, to follow the plot line of this movie. Couple in with that, Christopher Nolan likes to make his movies kind of organic. The sound, the dialogue spoken by the actors has not been enhanced, has not been overdubbed. It's natural, the way that it was shot on site. So it's hard to hear with wind noise and environmental noise and sound effects that are put into it, adding to another layer that makes it difficult to follow the story. Not impossible, but I think it's unnecessarily difficult to follow the storyline of this movie. As I say, I was visually blown away by this movie. I wound up giving it a Dean's List B-. And I do recommend that you see it. The other thing with this, Christopher Nolan has insisted that this movie only be shown in theaters. This is not going to be a movie that is streaming online anytime soon. So if you want to see Tenet, and they are betting that lots of you are going to want to see this two-hour-and-a-half movie, two-and-a-half-hour-long movie. It's long. You're going to have to go to a movie theater to see it. And a lot of people are like, not me, not going to a theater, not going to happen. There's that. I will tell you that this is the first movie that I have seen in a theater since the beginning of the pandemic, since I think the last time I was in a theater, what was it, February? I think I saw Quiet Man 2, which still hasn't come out yet. Plenty of time to write my review for it. But it was weird being back in a theater. I'll be honest with you. Even though there were maybe 10 people total in the theater, they have greatly reduced the capacity of movie theaters. They're cleaning them like crazy. I think it's safe. As long as there aren't a lot of people in the theater, I think it's safe. But you know what? Everyone has to make their own decision on that. So I guess I'm recommending the movie with a B-. We are going to get to the Christopher Nolan movie, but I'll tell you what, let's wait until after the news, because we have this interview that we did in which I talked with Christopher Nolan about this movie that has been delayed and delayed and delayed. It's got to be a little bit frustrating, I would think, for a movie director to have that happen to his film. We talked with Christopher Nolan. We talked with John David Washington, Denzel's son, about the movie and acting in his first Christopher Nolan movie. We will share all of that with you coming up right after we get a check of our WGN news. I will tell you that our weather forecast is calling for the rain from this morning to taper off. It should turn into kind of a windy, humid afternoon, but then the thunderstorms are expected to return later in the afternoon and continue through the evening with localized heavy rainfall and possible thunderstorms, according to our WGN Weather Center. The high today is expected to be 84 degrees. The low tonight, 66. For tomorrow, Labor Day, partly cloudy, 75. There is no rain in the forecast for tomorrow. And it is 60 degrees officially in Chicago right now. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, where we cover the entertainment scene like crazy. We had the opportunity this week to talk with maybe one of the most sought-after directors in the world, Christopher Nolan, whose new movie, Tenet, has just come out. It is in theaters only. If you are comfortable going into the theaters, you can go and check out this film. I will tell you this, around the world, it is the number one movie right now, box office-wise. Much lower box office numbers than you might normally expect. But not only here in Chicago and Illinois and the U.S. and North America, but the movie has opened in China, in Japan, and other places around the world. And it is the number one movie in America. Finally, it has opened. The film was originally supposed to open in the middle of the pandemic, and it was delayed. When the delay date came, it was delayed again. It was delayed three times. And now, finally, they are sticking their toe in the water to see if you will go to the movie theaters again. So when I did a Zoom call with Christopher Nolan and the star of the film Tenet, John David Washington, the first thing I talked with him about were the nonstop delays that this movie has gone through. Christopher, if you could explain to me your reaction when all of the delays start. You worked for years getting this together, and then suddenly you're hit with one delay after another.
Well, I mean, I've worked for a long time on the project, and anytime you do a film on this scale, you're really I suppose, hoping for a particular environment that the film will come out in and all the rest, and the reality is often very different. In this case, it's extraordinarily different. But like everybody else in the world, things have been going on and difficulties have been faced by everybody that really put what we were dealing with into proportion. Our job is to just finish the film and be ready to put the film out when it's appropriate to do so and when cinemas could open again. And we're very glad that there are places in the world and now in America where we'll be able to show people the film.
What do you say to people who just still don't feel comfortable coming back? They want to see your movie, they just don't feel comfortable going back into a theater yet and want to know, why can't they see it on demand or at a drive-in?
Well, I think, you know, that's everybody's decision to make for themselves, and that's completely fine. And I think people should take their time and make decisions they're comfortable with. And we're hoping that audiences around the world will be patient with us as we roll out the film as slowly and safely as we need to.
John David, you were amazing in this, by the way. What was the challenge like doing a movie with Christopher Nolan? I mean, you've worked with some pretty great people. I have to think that this was the job of a lifetime.
Indeed it was. I guess the first challenge was just getting rid of the intimidating coat, if you will, when working with this legend. So I just wanted to get comfortable with us just being able to work together. And he really made me comfortable. Chris made me feel like I was a colleague, like I was a teammate. He valued my opinion. I felt heard. And it was just a natural chemistry I thought we had. So once I got comfortable with me just working with them, a lot of the physicality, a lot of the training that went into it, I didn't really have time to worry, because the day in and day out of it, getting this guy physically ready, took most of my time. So and I love the process, and having a football background, I was ready and aware and familiar with physical activity in that way. But this was on a whole new level, and I appreciated every moment of it.
Was there some special challenge, both emotionally and physically, of forwarding the story, but also inverting the story, going backwards with much of the story?
Well, in fact, there was. It's interesting, just from an actor's perspective, I usually, I have a process which changes depending on the script and the environment which I'm working in. This was the first time the physical demands and requirements sort of informed the emotional ones. They sort of let me know why he does certain things based off of the kind of movement that comes naturally to him. So, and because of the inverted world and where we are in the story, I had to track a lot. I never watched monitors, but on this film, I had to a couple of times just for the physicality of it and the inverted world rules. So, that was a new experience, which I loved.
Christopher, the story that you tell, is complex, really requires you to pay close attention. Do you think mostly that people who watch movies are spoon-fed, and they just want a story easily fed to them? Because you really require that you pay attention to what's going on. You're like a really tough and satisfying professor.
Yeah, we should put that on the poster. That's a great selling point. Tough and satisfying. I think, very kind words, but the reality is we're trying to make it entertainment first and foremost. And the way I work, I'm the audience for the movie for years until it's finished, and then it goes out to the world. And as the audience, I'm trying to make something that engages me on multiple levels. I want to be entertained. I want to be, in this case, taken around the world and given sort of a great sense of escapism and excitement. But then at the end of it, if there's more to engage you or more to resonate with or a little more to think about, or really just that sensation of maybe this is something I haven't quite seen before. It's a different spin on things. It makes you look at things a little differently. As an audience member, that's what I'm always up for. That's the ride I want. And I like to think, there are other people out there like that in the general audience who are just looking for something a little bit different.
So that's the way that he explains his complex storytelling. To him, it's what he finds entertaining. And I know plenty of people who find who love Christopher Nolan movies for their complexity. They enjoy going to see a movie 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 times. I know people that will see this movie 10 times, you know, to get to the core of it all. I just don't think you should have to see a movie that many times to get it. I think that storytelling should be clear, and you should be able to get it on one watching. And this movie, as I say, is a little bit hard to follow. I took that that I didn't like about the movie, and I took the visuals, which are maybe some of the most creative filmmaking that I've ever seen, cinematography that I've ever seen, tried to balance them off. With the cinematography, it makes the film a little above average, so I did give it that. But, you know, there were some negatives to weigh in there as well. It wound up being a Dean's List B-. Also on the movie front, by the way, while we're talking about new movies, the Disney film Mulan also opened this weekend, and that one is only streaming online. It's not in theaters at all. Disney decided to put it on their new online platform, Disney Plus, but there is what they call a premium access charge if you want to see this movie. An additional basically $30 to see the movie on top of what you would normally pay just to access Disney Plus in the first place. So you're going to pay your Disney Plus fee, and then you're going to pay an additional $30 to see Mulan right now. They are going to change that in December. So if you want to be among the first to see Mulan, you're going to pay a price for it. And I guess if you've got a whole family, you know, mom, dad, couple of kids, you know, a couple of some grandkids, whatever. If you were to go to a movie, you would pay more than $30 to see, you know, just to buy tickets. So I think that's probably Disney's thinking about that, not to mention the $4,000 that you would pay for concessions. But, you know, so that's what they're thinking about it. But in December of this year, Disney will relax that premium access charge. So you'll only pay the Disney Plus charge. There won't be an additional price to pay for Mulan anymore, not until December. That said, I like Mulan quite a bit. Disney's done quite a few of these live adaptations where they've taken some of their famous animated films, turned them into live action films. This one is loaded with some of China's top actors, including Jet Li and Donnie Yen, who you probably know from other martial arts movies. And I think it's a lovely story. It's beautifully done, a nice adaptation, a little more serious than the original adaptation, but a beautiful adaptation, a lovely exposure for many of us to Chinese tradition and culture. It is a story about family and tradition and honor. I liked it. That one I gave Dean's List B+. So if you're looking for you know, something to watch this weekend, there are a couple of choices. I've got all of my movie picks and my home video picks posted online at WGNTV.com/Dean's List if you want to take a look at all of that. Let me take a break and we will see what is coming up next. Your guess is as good as mine. There's been a small mechanical breakdown behind the scenes that we'll see if we can resolve during the break on WGN. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. And we wanted to, normally at this time we bring you our Week in Theater segment. And our intention this week was to bring to you a conversation with a representative, an ensemble member of the Congo Square Theater Company. Congo Square Theater has been doing amazing work in the Chicago area for quite a number of years. And with all of the talk of the death of Black Panther star Chadwick Boseman over the past week, really nothing has been said about the work that Chadwick did here in the Chicago area before he was in the Jackie Robinson film 42, before he was Thurgood Marshall and James Brown and some of the other major movie roles for which we know him now, before he was in a lot of the television productions that he was in that preceded any of those films as well. He actually wrote a theater piece called Deep Azure, and it was presented by the Congo Square Theater. And we had hoped that we were going to be able to talk this morning with one of their ensemble members by the name of Derek Sanders, who directed Chadwick Boseman's Deep Azure, had interaction with Chadwick Boseman early on, and thought he could give us some perspective on that. But as sometimes happens on live radio, guests are not where they're supposed to be. Backup numbers that are supposed to be emergency backup numbers are not backing up. So apparently we're not going to be talking with Derek Sanders this morning from Congo Square. So we're very sorry about that. And we'll see if we can reschedule that, because I think learning a little about Chadwick Boseman's early career before all of the superstar stardom that came to him after, you know, his major motion pictures, I think would be very interesting and very revealing about the true soul of the man, you know, before he was one of the most recognizable faces on the planet. I guess the Chadwick Boseman episode of Saturday Night Live was on last night. I didn't see it, but I remember I did see it the first time that it was on a couple of years ago. You know, everybody has been doing amazing tributes to Chadwick. And I got to point out that last Sunday, ABC Television Network, which is owned by Disney, which owns Marvel, you know, it's all in the family for them. Marvel, Chadwick Boseman, Disney, ABC, it's all one huge broadcast and entertainment conglomerate. I have to give them credit for an amazing tribute that they put together. I also have to think on incredibly short notice to put together in a tribute to Chadwick that ran after they showed the movie Black Panther without commercial interruption. I mean, that was something right there, that they ran the movie without commercials. It's big dollars. Networks don't usually do that sort of thing. And then did this beautiful tribute to Chadwick that followed. And I mean, it was a beautiful tribute with, you know, his co-stars, with his directors, with Oprah Winfrey, who had, you know, beautiful words to say about Chadwick Boseman as well. So got to give credit where credit's due. ABC did an amazing job paying tribute to Chadwick last Sunday night. So anyway, I wanted to try to take this into a, you know, slightly Chicago angle, and hopefully we'll be able to reschedule that. Apparently all of our guests are also taking the holiday weekend off. They don't know that we're like a 7-Eleven here. Except for the smock and the Slurpees, we're exactly like a 7-Eleven here. We are 24/7. We never close. And, you know, that'll be the end of all I have to say about that.
Is this your rain delay going on? Is it?
Hey, look at the beautiful girl on aisle 7. This is my rain delay.
This is your version of a rain delay.
Right. This is my guest delay theater that I have.
Everybody kind of backed down on you because of the holiday.
I don't know what's going on. You know, it happens. I got to say, we haven't had that happen in a really long time.
It has been a while.
You know, for a while there.
I remember.
For a while there, we could not get anybody to be on the show.
There was one time when you came on and said, guess what? We don't have any guests today.
Well, that was... That was the famous morning. Hey, Curtis, see if you can find go on the internet and see if you can find my Drew Carey interview.
That's the one.
Just type Dean Richards, Drew Carey. I'm sure it'll come up. That was the morning. That was the Sunday morning where every single guest on the show canceled before the show started. We had, I don't know, we had like 7 or 8 guests lined up for the show that day, and every single one of them canceled, which never happens. So I come on the air like a, you know, big wise guy saying, oh, like, what am I going to do? We don't have any guests on the show. And, you know, listeners are calling in pretending to be celebrities And it was actually quite funny, right? I don't even think you were on with us then.
I wasn't on that
I think
day,
Lyle
no.
Dean may have, might have been Lyle
was
Dean.
Was it Lyle?
It might have been Don Norton, who was doing the news back then. But, you know, we're joking around, and whoever was doing the news was enjoying, as you are right now, enjoying watching me sweat, not having a guest. And it was, and who else heard me doing this? At the time, WGN Radio was in partnership with Walt Disney World in Florida. And if you went to Walt Disney World on one of their TV channels, you could hear WGN Radio. You could actually hear it. And who was listening in Walt Disney World than Drew Carey, who you now know as the host of Price is Right, but then he was star of the Drew Carey Show. Do we have that ready, Curtis? All right.
Bye-bye. And let's see. This is Drew, it says, on line one.
Hi, Dean. It's Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I swear to God, I can't believe they kept me on hold for so long when you're looking for a guest. I'm in Disney World.
This is really Drew Carey.
Yeah, it's really Drew Carey.
Get out of here.
I'm in Disney World.
Why I kept you on hold so long? Because I thought you were somebody goofing on us.
No, I'm at Disney World. And I'm watching it on. I'm watching your show on TV. I guess you're owned by Disney.
Well, no, actually, we're not owned by Disney.
Now, you know how in hotel rooms they have radio stations.
Yeah,
WGN
at
WCBS is on another station.
Yeah, at the Disney resorts. We're on the television system there.
Yeah,
and you're watching
the
WGN channel, and you have us turned on, and you heard about our dilemma.
Yeah, I had you on while I was packing, and I heard you had your guest canceled, and I thought, well, I got nothing to do.
when I said if there are any celebrities listening. And it said Drew.
I was already on hold when he said that.
Yeah, it said Drew on the phone line. I thought, well, you know, somebody's goofing around saying that they're Drew Carey. Someone's going to call up and do a bad Drew Carey impersonation.
Oh, no. No, it's me.
Holy smokes. This is very cool.
See, so I'm going to make up for all the celebrities. Again,
I love your show. Well, and there's that. And there's that. A Drew Carey show is seen in syndication on our sister station, WGN Television.
Oh, no kidding.
Here in Chicago.
Oh, that's good.
It's on every night at 6:30. I watch it all the time. I've come to a couple of tapings of your show. That's how much I like
it. Oh,
heavy,
don't you think?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
And you are, you're just like one of the hottest guys on ABC right now.
I was on during sweeps, couple of sweeps ago when I was on Geppetto and everything. I was on 6 hours of prime time.
Yeah. I mean, you're one of the...
I wonder if that was a record.
Besides Regis, I think you are probably the most seen person on ABC, right?
I beat Regis because he's only on for 3 hours. I was on 2 Millionaires. He's on 4 Millionaires that week, but I was on 2 Millionaires... plus an hour of Drew Carey because they had 1.5 hours of repeat, an hour of Who's Line, which is the funniest show on TV.
You know what? It is absolutely hilarious. Tell me how. I mean, I know that's a show that started in England.
Oh, yeah, it's a radio show in England.
Right, but you just were a fan of that show and decided to adapt it and bring it to American TV.
Well, you know what? I never watched it till Ryan Stiles got. He's on Who's Line. He plays Lewis on the Drew Carey Show.
Right.
So Ryan Stiles got cast on the Drew Carey Show. And he said, oh, I do the show Who's Line. I go, I heard about it on cable. And I never really watched it, and I watched it because he was on it. It's really funny. I don't know if you've never seen it, you have to watch it.
I watch it all the time. I watch it all the time. You know what? I'm not blowing smoke up your butt saying this to you. The American version, I think, is 100 times funnier. I don't know if it's...
The British producers think that the American version is better.
I think it's much funnier, and I don't know if it's the people that you have, Ryan Stiles, and the other comedians, the improvisational comedians whose names escape me, but the regular cast that you have on there are so hilariously
funny. Ryan Stiles, Colin Mochrie, is the again Wayne Brady are always on the show. Wayne Brady does a lot of the music stuff, and then we rotate the fourth seat all the time. But those guys, those guys are so funny, and everybody says they like my show, and all I do is tell them what to do. I just read the stupid cards.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you have that, you're sort of the straight man for all of the madness that's going on.
Yeah, kind of, but, you know, that's all the funny stuff.
Yeah, well, it's essential, though. You know, you're feeding everybody just the right thing. How much preparation? Is there absolutely no planning for the improvisational community?
Oh, yeah, it's all made up. Well, you know,
they have no idea what's going to happen before
the performers don't, but it's really one of the most planned shows because everything that I read off the cards is planned ahead of time. And
that was an interview that I had no plan to have that day on the show. May of 2000? Are you kidding me? Wow, 20 years ago. Schwani, you are old. 20 years ago. But that was the famous Drew Carey interview where he called.
The legendary Drew Carey interview.
And as he so succinctly put
yes,
it,
he did.
Saved my ass that day.
You said it.
Well, anyway, so we got a little fun to hear Drew Carey this morning. So that's nice. We will hear from Bob Newhart in our next hour. I know that's going to happen because we recorded it. That's coming up. Welcome in, everyone. Happy Sunday morning. Happy Labor Day weekend. Happy days again, Schwani. Good news.
What's the good news? I could use some.
We found our missing guest.
Oh, good.
We went to the WGN Department of Missing Guests. It's a small window right down the hall. Barry Williams was there from the Brady Bunch. Lost of the Polka Queen was there. And also the guest that we had scheduled for our theater segment, Derek Saunders with Congo Square Theater Company. Derek, I'm so happy to hear you're okay. We worry about our guests.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm fine and I'm ready to go.
Okay, good. I don't know what happened, but I was so looking forward to talking to you about the direction that you did with Chadwick Boseman his play Deep Azure. Explain the whole story behind that, how it happened, how Chadwick Boseman happened to bring this work to Congo Square Theater. It's truly one of the early works of the great Chadwick Boseman.
Yes, yeah. So Chad and I met at Howard University. He was a couple years under me, and we created kind of a mentorship kind of thing as he was starting out school. He was always a really keen director and writer. He was there at Howard in the theater department as a director-writer. And that's how I knew him, you know, and through the years we kept in touch, and I knew he was part of the genesis of a thing called hip hop theater. Right. And he co-wrote a show called Hieroglyphic Graffiti and A Rhyme Deferred. And when I came up to Chicago after I left grad school, me and Chad always kept in touch, and we were always he was always fond of me, and I was fond of him. So we always kept a strong friendship, right? But we had got to a point in, I think, 2004, where Congo was looking to have its first commission. And I said, you know what? I want to do something really different, something that is unique to Congo Square, that technically, you know, we would do and we could do our best, right? So I had an idea, and that idea is I wanted to take the urban poetry, the prose, Louder Than a Bomb, and Deaf Poetry Jam was doing a poetry thing.
Right.
And I was like, I want to take that and elevate it in a narrative form to Shakespeare. And I knew Chad at the time had went to London to train for Shakespeare. He got that grant from Denzel. He got that grant from Denzel and then went to train in Shakespeare. And he also knew that world. So I commissioned him to write Deep Azure, which was based on a student who had been killed by a police officer, who had been basically stalked by a police officer and killed in D.C. And basically it is one of the first attempts of taking hip-hop-esque urban prose and layer it in into a Shakespearean kind of narrative.
Right. So how would you describe him? I mean, I interviewed him, so many times, you know, with the movies, with 42, mm-hmm. with the other big movies that came out. The last time that I spoke with him was for Black Panther. But you knew him really before any of his professional jobs, the smaller ones before 42 and the big ones after that. What kind of guy was he? I found him to be just so down to earth and committed. You know, I can often tell when I interview people who are the ones that who are into acting and who are the ones into being celebrities, Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Chad, mm. Chad, as you're calling him, all he was totally into the acting and the art, the way I remember.
Yes. Well, he was a he was a consummate artist, and he was he's Southern, so he had this gentleman Southern gentleman quality where he was always full of big love, but it was always to a point of how he loved the art, how he loved storytelling. So at the point that he took Deep Azure, the reason that he moved out to L.A. is because he was going to take that play that he wrote and he was going to turn it into a film.
Yeah.
And but he was still auditioning as an actor, but really was trying to focus on his writing and his directing, and then 42 hit, you know?
Right.
And then when 42 hit, you know, and then it kind of just grew from there. And I remember him telling me about some of the early stuff. And, you know, we used to talk all the time about, you know, because there were multi-levels to him actually getting the 42 audition to getting the part. And he used to discuss, you know, how he was navigating, and it was turning so quickly. But he always remained. I've seen a lot of the interviews with you and him, and he just remained to be Chad. I was like, oh, that's how me and Chad talk. Mm. In, you know, if we're on the phone. So he had a rapport, he had a bigger vision, and he just loved people. He loved the industry. He loved the work.
Yeah. What a treat for you to have had him in your life, to have collaborated with him on such an early level, you know, because the amount of fame that he achieved can be overwhelming to a person. There's nothing he could do about that, but it sounds like at the core he remained the same person. I just think of, you know, how lucky you were to have known Chadwick in his purest form, you know, before before all the celebrity surrounded him, you know.
And he never changed with me. I mean, you know, our relationship remained the same since, you know, he was in undergrad, and we were very close, and his relationship, he remained himself. He just, I think he gave an example, is that you can make it and still be yourself. Yeah. If you have, you know, that purity of heart. And I am thankful not only for him being in my life, absolutely, you know, but I'm thankful that he got to share a little bit of who he was with everybody else.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, even though he died so young, you know, he had a blessed career, and he did the things that he wanted to do and he was passionate about. And even though we didn't get to see on a big screen his writing and his directing, this next thing, he's doing August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is right. going to be on Netflix, I'm just super excited about it.
Yeah, with starring Viola Davis, that's going to be amazing. So maybe you will, restage Deep Azure at Congo Street?
Yeah, Congo Square. People are talking about that, so we'll see. We'll see where it is, you know. We got to see where... we're going to see if we can do it as a tribute to Chad. But we've been in talks with some people to discuss, you know, maybe we'll give it an opportunity for it to be seen in another light back in Chicago.
Yeah, I love that there is that Chicago connection to him also. Were you surprised that he kept his illness secret? I mean, since, you know, you kind of really knew the person. Were you surprised that he didn't share that with everybody?
No, I mean, he was a deeply private person, and he didn't want the attention to solely be on him, you know, and so he would, I can see how he moved. He moved in kind of a regal way, and a lot of it, even though I wish we could have supported him more, he wouldn't have wanted that. And I think one of the true freedoms that you have is, you know, deciding where you're going to place your money, deciding what you're going to do with your time, and maybe even you get lucky enough to decide in which way you want to, you know, if you die or if you're sick, which way you want to present that to the world. And I think he was deeply private, deeply hopeful, and didn't want to, because the people around him would have stopped everything and made it about that.
Right.
And I don't think he wanted that.
Yeah, you got to, you know, say he did it on his own terms. And
absolutely.
You know, in the final analysis, you know, that's really what it's about, you know, finding some comfort in tragic situations like that. He did it the way that he wanted to do it, which was, you have to respect that. I really appreciate you taking some time to
my pleasure
to join. I'm so happy that we're able to connect and share these stories of Chadwick's Chicago connection, but you know, the Chad before all the movie stardom, I think, is so revealing about who the man really is. I appreciate you joining us. What's going on with Congo Square? I mean, you're shut down like everybody else, I imagine, right?
Yeah. We have some online programming that's happening, and we're giving an online class. You can check it out at www.congosquaretheater.org. We have our season laid out. And just join us either with classes or the virtual projects we have. We have a comedy, coming up. It's a sketch comedy thing called On the Black Hand Side. And we got a lot of projects, so please check us out on our website.
Nice to talk to you, Derek. I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
It's Derek Saunders with Congo Square Theater Company of these early collaboration with Chadwick Boseman this morning. It's 11:19. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning, 11:23. Uncle Dean on Sunday morning with Bob Newhart coming up in about 10 minutes. Had a great Zoom chat with Bob on the occasion of his, believe it or not, 91st birthday, which was yesterday. Bob born in Oak Park 91 years ago yesterday. One of Chicago's very own, loves Chicago, talks about Chicago in the interview, talks about his early association with WGN. He did some early television shows on WGN back in the day. Talks about his sitcoms. Talks about his relationship with Don Rickles, his longevity, personal and professional longevity. I think you'll enjoy the interview. We're gonna, you know, it's a Zoom interview, so it's, you know, got that weird Zoom quality to it. But you'll more than be able to perfectly understand everything. And as I say, that's coming up in about 10 minutes. A couple of things I want to get into here this morning. First thing is for Labor Day weekend. I was thinking about that this morning. You know, this is the weekend that we acknowledge and celebrate the labor forces, the working people of America. And it got me thinking about all of my jobs before radio. And I want you to think about your jobs, whether or not before radio or not. But it got me thinking about my first job and my worst job. And that's, I want to just open up the phone lines for that for a couple of quick minutes here. 312-981-7200. I've talked about this before, so pardon me if you've heard this before, but one of my very, very first jobs, I think this actually was my first job. I'm going to say I was 10, 11 years old, and I was given, I was paid $1 for 8 hours of work, which already, you know, we should stop and complain right about that. Never mind the kids making Nike shoes. I was paid $1 for 8 hours of bagging potatoes. I would stand in the basement of an A&P grocery store that a family friend was the manager of. And I was happy to do it. I was making a buck. I was 10 years old, and I got a buck. And it didn't seem like slave labor at the time, but now that I think about it, it was awful, where I would have to take these 100-pound bag of potatoes, slit open the burlap bag, and take the potatoes. Some of them were rotten. Throw away the rotten ones, clean them off, clean off the rest, and bag them into 5-pound bags and staple them shut. And then they would go upstairs to the produce department, and, you know, you would buy these potatoes that poor little Dean had just bagged under slave labor conditions. It was awful. It really was. It was hot. There was no air conditioning. I'm lugging around. I'm 10 years old, lugging around these 100-pound bag of potatoes. And, you know, all these stinky, rotten potatoes. It was horrible. That was my first job. I think that's where I got my work ethic. From that, everything else was great. How about you? 312-591-7200. What was your very first job? I think my first job and my worst job kind of coincide, because I can't really think of a job that I've had that was actually worse than that. That was about awful. I was a paper boy. A lot of us were paper boys. I hated that job more than anything. But, you know, I don't even remember what I got paid. I'm sure it wasn't very much. But again, slave labor. You looked around. You had to go to the newspaper office. They had a big stack of your newspapers there. You had to take the rubber bands, roll up the newspapers, rubber band them up. I don't even think they had plastic sleeves back then. I think it was just those green rubber bands. You bag them up, put them in your big newspaper bag, you know, the canvas bag, and, you know, attach them to your bicycle, my Schwinn Typhoon bicycle, which I wish I still had today. That was a fantastic bike. And then I would, you know, go through the neighborhood, my zone, and deliver these newspapers. And for every, you know, for every newspaper that was gone, it came out of my salary. And that was a terrible job, too. That was a terrible job. Yeah, I didn't get any decent jobs, really, until high school. Then I worked, when I became of age, I could work at the grocery store, the same A&P grocery store, with my potato bagging career. I was able to, you know, be on the clock and do, you know, like regular grocery store work. And I got a decent wage, you know, for something like that. Bob, how about you? Your first or worst job?
Well, my first job was a little, I'm 83 years old, so I go back a few years, that's for sure. My first job, I think I was 12 years old. I got 50 cents an hour for getting cans of produce out of the basement, taking upstairs and putting them on the shelves at a corner grocery in the city.
Would you say 50? Did you say 50 cents an hour?
Uh huh. Correct.
Well, that's still a lot better than what I got for my potato career.
Then I worked at Gazelle Records, washing windows, taking the trash out, keeping the store clean, and people could come in and try records in little booths. If they liked them, they bought them. If they didn't like them, they put them back in the sleeve and back on the shelf.
Yeah, I remember that, the early record stores. You could actually listen to the record before you bought it.
Exactly. And then I worked for Artville Furniture Frame, where I pounded little pegs in wooden frames. That was the part of the furniture. A glue can, a little peg, and tap, tap, tap.
Oh, yeah. You were a furniture builder. Yeah.
A furniture builder. There you go.
Yeah, very nice. Who is that I hear laughing in the background?
That's my lovely wife. We're celebrating 62 years of marriage this month.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, what is your name, lovely wife of 62 years?
Lovely wife is called Diane.
Oh, Diane, happy anniversary to you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call, and I hope you have a wonderful day today.
We will.
62 Bye-bye. Years. God bless you both. That's fantastic. Dave and Berwyn, you're on WGN.
Hi, good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
So what was your... go ahead.
I'm sorry. So my first job, the pay was nothing, but the age of 11, my grandfather, I was with my grandfather, and he taught me my work ethic by collecting aluminum cans when we lived in Pilsen.
Yeah, and take him to the recycling center then after that?
And we did. So we spent the whole summer in the mornings. My grandfather, in his mid-60s, was on one end of the alley. And I was on the other end of the alley on 18th, and we started on 18th Street in Polina, and we went up and down the alleys nearby, just collecting aluminum cans for about an hour or two, and then we would both go, you know, diving and smashing and putting them in the bags.
I'll bet.
And then bringing them back.
Yeah, I'll bet you had some great time with your grandpa, right?
You know, it was sweaty, it was smelly.
Yeah.
But you know what? I look back at it now, and I thank him for that.
I'll bet you wouldn't trade it to have that kind of time, even though it was, you know, what you were doing is, you know, horrible. To have that kind of time with your grandpa is a pretty cool thing.
I wouldn't trade it for the world, Dean.
Hope you have a great weekend. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dean.
At the car wash. Working at the car wash, yeah.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. For the Labor Day weekend, talking about our first jobs and worst jobs. Revealed my potato packing history to you this morning of my first job. And coming up in about 10 minutes here, my one-on-one with the great Bob Newhart, celebrating his birthday today. Let's go to Sonia in Lindenhurst. Morning, you're on WGN.
Good morning, Dean. I'm calling in because my first job is similar to you, where my neighbor and I decided when we were about 10, 11 years old, we were going to try to make some money over the summer. So we walked around the neighborhood trying to find somebody that would let us babysit, and we found somebody, and she had a five-year-old, a three-year-old, and a newborn.
How old were you? How old?
We were about 10, 11 years old, the two of us. And so we would babysit for her. I'm not really sure if she was at home or if she was shopping or it was like her time to get away. But she would have us come to her house, and we had to get the kids dressed. We fed them lunch. We either played games with them, took them to the park, all kinds, changed diapers, all that stuff.
Wow.
And we shared a whopping 75 cents an hour between the two of us.
Man, you shared it. You shared it.
We shared it. We learned a lot.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, what is the one thing that happened while you were babysitting that mom never knew about?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Anything ever really go wrong or?
Nothing. I don't think anything went wrong. I think the biggest thing that I remember was actually trying to pack up three kids and take them to the park and keep track of them and bring them back. And yeah, I think that was the biggest thing. And changing diapers. It was the first time any of us had changed diapers. That was interesting, too.
And 10 years old on top of it. That's amazing. Sonia, have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. Have a nice holiday.
You do the same. Hi, Trevor. You're on WGN.
Good morning, Dean. Yes, sir.
Hello. So,
my first job was on the northwest side by Irving and Kedzie, actually between Troy and Kedzie on Irving Park, called Frosty's Grill. Okay. I got paid $20 a week for sweeping, mopping, spilling the salt, sugar, pepper, napkins, and I peeled potatoes. And the best thing of it all, I got to eat free whenever I want. Burgers, the special, eggs, whatever. Whenever I went in, I got to eat free, even if I wasn't working.
That was a great deal.
Yes. For being 12 years old,
Yeah, $20 a week and eating for free. Are you kidding me?
Yep. I mean, I'm no longer there. It's actually, I think, an insurance company now. I don't want to say, but... but it was great, and Ed and his wife were great people, and you know, unfortunately he passed away a number of years ago, but that'll always stick in my mind. And I remember on Saturdays he used to listen to polka music on the AM station.
That's why I've been trying to get a polka show started here on WGN.
Oh, there you go, just like the Crusher. How about that? Put a polka with the dollies.
That's right. That's fantastic. Trevor, have a great weekend, my friend.
You too, sir. Take care.
You too. Hi, Barbara. You're on WGN.
Hi. My name is Barbara Christofferson. I live in Mount Prospect. When I turned 14, I went downtown and got a working permit, and I worked 40 hours a week at American Color Type, packing Christmas seals into little plastic bags. We had to do 20 boxes a day. And I made $17 a week, and I took home $15.63, and I gave my paycheck to my mom all the time.
Of course. Of course. Now, you're talking about Christmas seals, those little stamps, right?
No, the ones you used to lick to put on your packages that you wrapped.
Yeah, actual U.S. postage stamps, but the Christmas...
Not postage stamps. No.
No, I understand.
They were all different kinds, Santa Clauses and...
Yeah. Yeah, but they were like stamps. They were similar to stamps, right?
Yeah.
I wondered who put all that stuff in the little plastic bags.
Yep.
I didn't know you were rolling in money like that, $17 a week. That's something.
I was happy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll bet Mom was happy, too, to get a little
Mom
extra money.
Mom was happy, too, and I got my $2 a week allowance, so I used that for streetcar going back and forth to work.
How about that?
And get an ice cream cone at the ice cream parlor next to the Embassy Theater.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, this remembering all this for Labor Day, all of our first jobs and our worst jobs. Edwin, what was yours?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I worked in my parents' grocery store, 2042 North Cicero Avenue in the Cragen District. I stocked the shelves. I priced the cans, swabbed the deck, and I got a grand total of 75 cents a week.
Wow.
And we had polka music playing all the time.
Attaboy.
In the radio.
But who needs money when you got polka music playing in the background?
You got it. Absolutely. Ocha Vista.
I did all those same things at the A&P grocery store in Hyde Park when I was a kid. Did you always have purple ink on your fingers and pants from stamping?
Yes. It's funny. Funny you should mention that, because when I became a teenager, I worked for all the chains, Joel, A&P, Kroger, and National. Remember National was out there?
National Tea, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, it was the least thing I liked in life. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
When I look at cans on a shelf, I go into a little bit of a trembling.
I'm right with you.
It's a real trauma. It's PTSD when I go into a grocery store.
Yeah, we used to have those speed stampers that had purple ink, and then we would actually stamp the price onto the package, the can, whatever.
That's right.
And you would always wind up with purple ink on your fingers and in your back pocket where the stamper went, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you were there. That's exactly right.
I'm with you, my brother.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day, Edwin. Yeah, look at that. Traumatized both of us after all these years. 11:45. Let's get to one of the best guys in the world, the great Bob Newhart. Zoom chat with him one-on-one next.
Hello.
Just trying to think of all the years in which Bob Newhart has been one of the icons of television. Not only with his very successful sitcoms, The Bob Newhart Show, and then the Newhart series, and several other shows that he's had through the years, but stand-up comedy, appearing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, on Ed Sullivan, having one of the most successful comedy albums of all time, The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart, which won the Grammy Award for Album of the Year. It beat out Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra and all the musical performers that year. It was the Album of the Year, and he was also named Best New Artist of the Year. He has a couple of Grammy Awards for all of that. We've been so lucky to have talked with Bob Newhart so many times over the years and developed a friendship with him. We had to call him the other day and wish him a happy birthday. Bob turned 91 years old yesterday, and as you will hear, is sharp as ever, is funny as ever, and is with us once again on WGN.
We haven't talked for a while, so it's good to see you.
It's great to see you on this new technology. Who would have ever thought we would be doing interviews this way, right?
You know, I got into computers in like 1977, and because I knew my kids were going to get into it and they'd have questions. My kids are so far ahead of me with computers. I have to ask them every question.
Well, I give you a lot of credit, you know, for just, you know, for doing this. A lot of people, when they do these Zoom chats, you know, this is what they see. They see a half of a face. You know, you don't know what you're going to get. So you're in good shape. So you look great. You sound great. I presume that you're doing okay during this crazy pandemic, huh?
Well, it's like Groundhog Day. You know, I saw the movie and I enjoyed it, but I didn't know we'd be living it some years later. You know, I mean, it's like Groundhog Day. Every day, it's the same.
Yeah. You know? Have you pretty much been just sticking to the house?
Stuck in the house, yeah.
Yeah. What do you do to occupy your time?
Well, I'm great at projects. I never quite finish them. They're always kind of half done.
Yeah.
But I'm great at that. I am probably the best in the world at the end of the day, I've accomplished absolutely nothing and I'm exhausted.
Yeah. See, that's why we're friends. That's my life's goal is to, be great at doing absolutely nothing. And, at the end of the day.
And congratulations. It's been an incredible career.
I want to show you something. I'm here at my house in my home office. And you can see behind me, I've got pictures and, things like that. This is one of the pictures that I have here in my home office. I hope you can see it. It's you on a WGN camera. Do you remember the circumstances with that?
WGN, the lobby of WGN, the rotunda, whatever you call it. And so they did the Emmys from the lobby of the Tribune Tower. And they asked me, I'd been on a show called The Dan Sorkin Show, which was seen by nobody. And in fact, our director said that when the show went on the air, if you put your head out the window, you could hear an audible going on all across Chicagoland, people tuning out. Because we found a bar show, and bar had a huge audience.
Yeah.
So I did a thing called Abe Lincoln, a routine I had called Abe Lincoln. I hadn't even started doing stand-up yet. And it was just for the advertising guys and guys in the business, in the television business. It wasn't televised anywhere. And I did the Abe Lincoln routine. It was well-received. And I remember Alex Dreyer.
Sure. Famous newscaster in Chicago, sure.
Yeah, he was a war correspondent.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you mean there's no talent in Chicago? And as a result of that, I did a Man on the Street show on ABC for Red Quinlan, which again was seen by nobody.
I'm seeing a pattern developing here, Bob.
And it's carried over. It was on opposite Captain Kangaroo and the Today Show.
Yeah.
Which were killers, And so we were on for 16 weeks. We did five shows a week for 16 weeks, and we got one postcard. I wasn't even sure that the signal was getting out of the building. I don't know. Dan Sorkin, TJ in Chicago, one of the top TJs in the country. The Warner Brother record people happened to be coming through town, and I had been on Dan's show on the after the par show, and he said, I had this friend of mine I think is funny, and they said, have him put down some of the stuff he's done, and we'll listen to it. So I put down Abe Lincoln, I put down the Submarine Commander, and the driving instructor with the three routines I had at the time. And they said, okay, so we'll record you at your next nightclub. And I said, that's kind of a problem because I've never played a nightclub. So they said, we'll have to get you into a nightclub. So, and it took a while before I played a club called the Tidelands in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And they were willing to take a chance on a guy just breaking into stand-up who had never done stand-up in his life. And went down, recorded the album, and the history of the album. It was the number one on the Billboard charts.
Yeah, the Button Down Mind album. Yeah, that's
comedy record to ever go to number one, and that was kind of the start of everything.
Yeah, it's it went to number one. It won Grammy Awards. It won record the album of the year that year. You beat out Sinatra and all the top vocalists of the day.
I was a little nervous about beating out Sinatra, but yeah. nothing happened. Everything.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a comedy or spoken album again, ever, that won Album of the Year. It won every accolade. And by every measure, today, 60 years later, it's the 60th anniversary of The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. It is still hilarious to listen to. It's not dated. It's not, you know, oh, that was funny all those years ago, but it's not now. It's still hilariously funny. There is just a timeless quality to what you did then, what you've done your whole career, and you know, what you're still doing now.
Well, it's been a great ride. It's been, just as you mentioned, 60 years.
It's not surprising to me at all. Which brings me around to you celebrating your 91st birthday this week. Happy birthday to you, my friend. That's so fantastic.
That's another thing I didn't think would last this long.
what do you attribute, you know, your longevity, your sharpness, your, just, you know, you're running on all cylinders. It sure seems that way anyway.
Well, you know, my wife and I, Jenny and I, this coming January, we'll be married 58 years, and people will ask me, what do you account for the longevity of a marriage, and I really think laughter. I really think laughter is a very important part of life, especially now with the pandemic. Humor is really supposed to get you through these times. I mean, that's what comedians do, and it's very important. It's very important in life. I think it's as important as breathing. I really do.
Yeah, that's part one of our interview with Bob Newhart. We'll share the second half, which he talks about Don Rickles and his secret to longevity. Lots of insight with the great Bob Newhart, celebrated his 91st birthday yesterday. We'll get to that coming up in a little while. Coming up in our next hour as well, after 12 o'clock, we've got kind of a little mini food time show today. We're going to be off early because of White Sox baseball. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time, because I know a lot of you are going to be out on the grills for the holiday weekend. We've been sharing some great recipes, doing some good cooking on TV, on the WGN TV morning news. Dean cooks mostly on Wednesdays. Sometimes it's on Fridays if there happen to be press conferences and things going on. But we did a great chicken wing recipe on the grill this past week. The lettuce cup, the chicken lettuce cup recipe that I did last week, a huge hit. I'm going to go over some of those recipes, all coming up in our next hour after the news. The ever-familiar theme of the Newhart TV sitcom, which Bob Newhart was innkeeper, a charming place in Vermont.
I think the music is by Henry Mancini, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Dean. This is my partner, Schwani, and my other partner, Schwani. Oh, what if there were two of you? Oh, my gosh.
Jeez. What if there were two of you?
It's too much having one of each of us is plenty. That's such a funny show. That is still such a hilarious show.
The final moments of the show finale? Oh, among the best dream, in television.
The dream sequence.
Oh.
The dream sequence. Going back to Suzanne Plachette.
Brilliant.
Absolutely. He's he talks about you know, having great writers and great performers with him. One of the other things that we talked about in our one-on-one Zoom interview with Bob Newhart was his original series, The Bob Newhart Show, in which he played the therapist whose office was right here on Michigan Avenue, right in downtown Chicago. And such a funny thing that he talks about. I asked him what people talk to him about all the time about that series.
You know, what's interesting is people in Chicago, when they watch the opening of where I get on the Ravenswood L.
Yeah.
When I go up, I take it up north, I get off around Evanston, Lake Forest, somewhere like that. And every day I go 55 blocks past my stop on Sheridan Road. Now, would you want to go to a therapist, a psychologist, who went past his address every day of his life? You know?
That's so funny that, you know, people notice that. I notice because I used to work in the building where your office was set, where you would see you go into the building. I used to work in that building myself, so I think about that every day. But my thought was, I mean, you've made all of us laugh all of these years. Who and what makes you laugh?
Well, I'll tell you who I think, aside from my friend Brickles, who, of course, passed a couple of years ago. I think Pryor is the most influential comedian for the past 50 years. He's incredible. I still quote from his albums. As a matter of fact, I gave him an award for the Lifetime Achievement Award on television for one of the comedy shows. And I handed him, he was in the wheelchair by that time. So we came out of commercial. I was standing next to him. I handed him the award. And he looked up at me and he said, I stole your album. I said, what'd you say, Richard? He said, I stole your album in Peoria. So I said, well, you know, I got a quarter of an album. And he said, give me a quarter. He's unbelievable. And,
yeah.
And again, he makes people laugh, you know, that it's so, I can't stress it too much. It's so important. Especially now, to just find the humor in it.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's that plus, you know, millennials love you from being on Big Bang Theory. And, you know, now Young Sheldon, you're doing, you know, some work with them. I mean, it just doesn't matter what generation it is. You know, the comedy of Bob Newhart, which was hilarious when Button Down Mind came on 60 years ago, all these years later, kids who are 17, 18, 19, 20 in their 30s, they're also loving Bob Newhart as well. Not to mention some of the movies that you've done, like Elf.
Yeah, there are a couple. Not all of them, but there are a couple. I did one with Gene Wilder as a movie for television called Thursday's Game, written by James Brooks. And that was a lot of fun. Again, it's a secret, you know, good writing and good cast out of here.
Yeah. So,
it's interesting. When the album came out, it was really a sea change in comedy. It was Mike and Elaine, Shelley Berman, Lenny Bruce, Jonathan Winters, myself, and it was picked up by the college kids. The college kids would they go to the dorm, and they'd all get a beer, and they played the comedy records, either mine or Shelley's or Mike and Lane's, or Lenny's, and that was their nightclub. And so, it really, the young people kind of set the tone for tomorrow. You may find that kind of frightening right now. That's what they do.
I find everything frightening now, Bob. So, 91 years old, how are you going to celebrate?
I just bought myself a new camera, and the family's coming over, the family in L.A., and we're going to have dinner, and you know, when it's all said and done, when you reach 91, you start thinking about what it's all said and done. It's your friends and it's family. And that's what the world's all about. It isn't about awards and that kind of thing. It's about your friends. I miss so many of my friends that aren't here anymore. Dick Martin, I mentioned Don Rickles. But Rickles and I had a deal. If I was in the audience and he was on stage and he wasn't making any sense, I was going to come out of the audience. And I wasn't making any sense. He would come out of the audience and say, you know, it's Bob, it's over, okay, you know. And there were a couple of times with Rickles. I started toward the stage several times. But then I turned around and take my seat again.
Oh, man. Bob, you're the greatest. Thank you so much for spending some time. I really appreciate it. I can't tell you how happy I am to see you and how well you're doing. It's just great. And
I got my mother lived to 94, so I have to thank her genes for that. I still make sense.
You sure do.
I think.
You sure do. I'll tell you what. I'll walk up on the stage if I ever hear you not making sense. Is that all right?
There may be a big line of people in front of you.
he is just the funniest guy. I love that guy so much. The great Bob Newhart, celebrating his 91st birthday yesterday, and we're happy that he spent some time with us for not only for our WGN radio show, but we built that into a nice story for our brand new primetime newscast, News Nation, that you can watch on our national cable channel, WGN America. They ran the story yesterday, and WGN TV ran the Bob Newhart story. That's what Bob was talking about in the interview, and he congratulated us on our new effort, and he thought what a great idea to have a national newscast that doesn't take sides, that is neither left nor right, and just, you know, reports the news. Even Bob Newhart likes the idea. And we'll be developing some stories for News Nation. And you can check it out yourself. It's on WGN America from 7 to 10 p.m. Central Time. You can also take a look at NewsNationNow.com, their website, and get all that you need from there. Maybe you just want to listen to good old Dean on the old-fashioned radio. We're going to continue after a quick break with a little mini version of our Food Time show. I've got some ideas for you for the grill for the holiday weekend. What are you doing on the grill this weekend? You got some plans? Something special that you're going to do? I'd love to hear about it. 312-981-7200. White Sox taking on the Kansas City Royals in KC. It's coming up right at 12:30 with our pregame show. This gives us a little bit of a mini Food Time show today. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, our award-winning All Things Edible program that's been here on WGN for decades now. And, what's new this year with the pandemic, I've taken over all of the cooking duties on the WGN TV morning news. We would occasionally have a chef on the show, but now I'm the chef on the show because I didn't already have enough stuff to do already. But actually, I enjoy it. I love cooking. I love sharing the recipes. It's a little bit challenging doing it in a 3 or 4 minute segment on television where something might take you a half an hour or a couple of hours of preparation. So there's a slightly different way of presenting it on television. But I think we've pretty much got that part down. What's so gratifying to me is all the feedback that I get. For people telling me, I tried your recipe for this and that, and it was the hit of my party. It was the hit of my barbecue. I heard it so much this past week because last week I did a chicken lettuce cup. Took some ground chicken, 1 pound of ground chicken. That's all there was to it. Fried it up in a pan, sauteed it up in a pan with some chopped green pepper, chopped red pepper, chopped Vidalia onions. I think that's all. I think that's all that was. Salt, pepper, a little garlic powder. That was sort of the base. And then I took a head of Boston lettuce, Boston lettuce, because it's, you know, very it's very circular. And you take the leaves apart, you clean them, of course, and dry them, and then you take the sautéed chicken mixture that you have, you mix it with the sauce of your choice. You can put barbecue sauce in it. I did a sweet chili sauce that was hot, but, you know, really sweet. I did a sriracha sauce with it. I did a peanut sauce, like a Thai peanut sauce that was delicious. That really was my favorite. Sesame sauce, variety of different sauces with just the base of these chicken and vegetables that were sautéed. Mix it together, and then you put it in a lettuce cup, and you put it on a nice big platter. It's beautiful to put out on the platter. It's gorgeous presentation. Could not be easier. Recipes up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. It's where you find all my recipes. It's where you find all of my videos of the segments that we've done on television. This past Friday, I did I did chicken wings four different ways. Now, a lot of people deep fry their chicken wings. They bread them. They put extra calories on them. I don't think you need to do that with the chicken wings. You simply take your chicken wings, you know, and normally it'll come with the little drumstick and then the other half of the wing, which is that the one that has the two bones in it. Just cut that right in half, right in the cartilage. Very easy to slice. Salt, pepper, and garlic again. And now you've got the base, and you grill them. You put them on the grill. I would say probably 20 to 25 minutes, flipping them over and over. You don't want them to get too burnt on one side. So, you know, a nice cook like that. Take an internal thermometer and stick it in the meatiest part of one of your chicken wings. It needs to be 160 degrees to be safe. When it gets to that, take them off, put them in a big bowl, and again, do the, you know, variety of sauces, whatever sauces you like. I did a traditional buffalo hot sauce, which was great, with some celery and blue cheese, dressing. I did, I got to say, my favorite this time was with barbecue sauce. I use a Famous Dave's bottled sauce that I think is delicious. They have a sweet and zesty flavor. It's great. It's not too hot, not too smoky, just perfect. And it was so good with the wings. I did this time a teriyaki sauce with them, and I did that sweet chili sauce again, just because I like cleaning out my sinuses with the heat, and it was fantastic. You know, and you mix them with, not all of them together, of course, each individual sauce with the base of these chicken wings that have been grilled. Mix them up, put them on a platter. I put, you know, the celery and the blue cheese out with them, and it was a really nice combination and great feedback from the listeners on all of that. Got to say, my number one most requested recipe of summertime, my key lime pie that I made. I want to say a month ago, month and a half ago, something. Four ingredients in this stupid key lime pie. It's so delicious. The pie crust, a block of cream cheese, a can of sweetened condensed milk, and some lime juice, key lime juice that goes in it. You mix it all together. You know, get your mixer, get it all nice and smooth, pour it in the pie crust, put it in the fridge. It's that easy. The whole thing takes 10 minutes, and then you let it stay in the fridge for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours. The more, the better. It'll solidify again, and you serve it up. What a huge hit. I take a fresh lime then and zest it on top of the pie, so it's really pretty with the lime zest. That's on top of it. Some people like to put whipped cream on top of the pie. I like to serve it separately, and, you know, everyone can do what they want to do with that. But as I say, I've got all those recipes up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. Tomorrow morning on the WGNTV Morning News, Uncle Dean's going to cook a giant chocolate chip cookie on the grill. A giant one, like the size of a record album. Mom, what's a record album? It's a giant. I'm going to cook that tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. And as I say, as always, the recipes and the videos all go up at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. All right, that's the end of the show today. We've got White Sox baseball coming up next. Sox and the Royals in Kansas City. pregame, and then Andy Mazur with the play-by-play is coming up.